Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity and the highway to north, welcome to Safety Wars for Thursday, December 3rd, 2024. How's everybody doing out there? I tell you what, last night, that program that we had, 140-some minutes long. I'm sorry, an hour and 40-some minutes long. Not 140-some. Rough. But we are working up towards that. What can I say? What more can I add to that? We can add a lot more. We're going to be going into a lot of those programs and everything. A lot of that's information. We're going to be going through a lot of it over the next couple of weeks, couple of months. A lot to digest, 500 and some pages. In case you missed it, the government released, the official title was The After Action Review of the COVID-19 Pandemic, The Lessons Learned, and a Path Forward by the U.S. House of Representatives. No big surprise if you're a regular listener of the show here what things are, but like I say, the advantage of having these reports is that everything in here organizes everything. All your thoughts are organized. It's in here. Now, as I said, some of the social media, vindication is fleeting. Right? You can be vindicated. I've vindicated on a lot of stuff. I said back in 2002, starting, that the government was not prepared for a pandemic. And we've been saying that all along. Social media, calling into radio shows, contacting public officials, running for office myself. Oh, well, you don't know what you're doing. Yeah. Well, and it turns out something like this happens. Let's not forget, millions of people sick. Millions of people dying. 1.2 million in this country. A lot of heartache and everything else. There's a human beings associated with this here. And to say, well, I told you so. Okay, I told you so. Or, no, vindication, well, this all verifies basically what we've been saying all along, especially when it goes into the public health sector, which the health safety field is part of, has to rebuild its credibility and everything. Those are very stinging words. Those have to be taken to heart. The question is, what are you going to do to build your credibility? So what I've normally do now is this. And no, they say, well, it's personal, you're getting personal, blah, 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 blah. And maybe you shouldn't say that. Is this. You're a safety professional. All right, so look in the mirror. You're a safety professional. You say, okay, the health and safety plan says X, Y, and Z. Our procedures say X, Y, and Z. We're doing X, Y, and Z, our plan, our things that, what is the context of what your decision? Why aren't you following the plan? Why aren't you following the procedure? And it's not to say, well, darn, I'm going to have to, you know, what? No, that's not what this is about. What this is about is, why aren't, you know, is the plan wrong? Is the procedure wrong? Can it be written better? Is it applicable to what we're doing? Is it a dumb rule? Is it dumb? Just, no, because we can't go around doing dumb things, because then we look dumb and we act dumb and everything else. you know, with that. Right. No, that's not why, you know, why are we doing this? You know, why are we doing it? You have to ask all of those questions here, because if you don't, then you don't improve. You don't learn. You don't improve. If someone says, and the other thing is, if you don't learn and improve, you don't, or anything else, why are you a safety professional? Because it's all about, a lot of about learning and improving. How are you supposed to save lives? How are you supposed to help people? One of the ways that you could get people and have more credibility is to get them working on your side. Have them have input on what goes on with everything. And there are certain things you're never going to be able to get around. You're never going to be able to get around that PPE, personal protective equipment, is your last line of defense against everything else. One of the other things that was not addressed in the report is this whole notion, and we try this, I think most of the hosts here on Safety FM what's safety? How do we define safety? How do we define the success of our procedures, of our results, of everything else? So at the beginning of every safety training program I have, right, every class, every training is this. What is safety? Can we define what safety is? Because if we don't define what safety is, we're dead in the water. You know, we're thrown out. So I'm teaching a class tomorrow. What is safety? Usually what I get is safety is zero accidents, zero incidents, zero illnesses, no spills. And then the actual question is, so if we have one accident, we're unsafe, we're not a safe company? No? Or do we define safety as the presence of controls, resiliency, capacity? And the more we add, the safer we should be. And with PPE being the last line of defense, right? With that old hierarchy of controls, with elimination, substitution, engineering, and administrative controls, and then PPE. And your most reliable is elimination. How do we do that? Because how safety is managed usually is, we're not going to worry about guards. We're not going to worry about this. We're just going to wear PPE or do, and guess what? Something happens, we're going to change a rule. So now changing rules is administrative controls down towards the bottom of that hierarchy of controls. And also one of the most least reliable things of doing things. And when you add in the Jens Rasmussen work modes there, right? The lack of knowledge or knowledge, rules and skills. Now you're automatically putting up from the skills up to something else, less reliable. We talked about that. I don't want to give a whole class here, but it's along the lines of that. Now, what do you do? Now, how do you define things? How do you, what's safety? Now, going back to the report, and let me get with this, all right? My question is, hold on, screen. So here's the report right here, right? The possibility that COVID-19 emerged because of a laboratory research-related accident is not a conspiracy theory. Now, the question that we have to ask is this. Why did the decision-makers and the people that influence us, why did they consider it a conspiracy theory? Were they told to consider it a conspiracy theory? Did the way that we presented the case make it sound unbelievable? Is it your own bias as a decision maker that caused you to think, well, conspiracy theory? Maybe it is because people were espousing things that were not quote-unquote experts that made you think it was conspiracy theory? Was it because people were repeating things and getting information off of social media like TikTok, Instagram, Twitter? What caused you to think that this was a conspiracy theory? That's what we have to do. Okay. Why do companies, right, number two, EcoHealth Alliance and Dr. Peter Dajak should never again receive U.S. taxpayer dollars. Now, the question should be, how did these people get money? Why did they get money? What were they supposed to do with it, right? Number three, scientific messaging must be clear and concise, backed by evidentiary support, and come from trusted messengers, such as frontline doctors treating patients. Okay, now, where are the certified safety professionals in there? I'm going to write this guy a letter. Where are the certified safety professionals, certified hazardous materials managers, certified industrial hygienists, people with experience in dealing with biological safety? Where are they fit in here? Now, he doesn't mention them specifically. He said such as, meaning not only. But those are the people that have to go out there and sell this. My question is, when I was hearing respiratory protection stuff, you can look back in our programs, the safety show, right, where everything's for show. My question is, what makes that person an expert on respiratory protection? What makes that person an expert on X, Y, and Z, on decontamination, on managing biological hazard? I'm going to tell you, most doctors do not have training in 29 CFR 1910-134. They'll write it off the bat. Most doctors do not have training on a lot of stuff. They basically got, this is what they said, N95 respirator, medical grade, which is rated for not only for particulates, but also for liquid, right? That's the medical grade one. I forget the standard for the medical end with it, all right? For liquid, right? Most of the doctors have gotten the same level, my experience, the same level of training as someone in a 1-hour course on respiratory protection. 10-hour outreach, maybe an hour, right? Public health officials must work to regain Americans' trust. Americans want to be educated, not indoctrinated. So here's the question. You're a safety professional. What are you going to do to build back your credibility? Maybe sharing some of our programs would be nice. Like, share, subscribe, give us a call. Have us present things. We got 17, 18 different people here on the network. I don't know. What are you doing to regain your credibility? Especially if you were the one tasked with enforcing these standards, and we found out we're basically horse grooving last night, according to this report. Former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo participated in medical malpractice and publicly covered up the total number of nursing home fatalities in New York. They recommended prosecution here for perjury, lying to the committee for several people. He was one of them, as I recall. All right. Now, my question is this. Does Andrew Cuomo have a medical background with this? Why was he communicating this? Great communicator. Again, he's got a legal background. Part of legal training is going out there and learning how to make an argument, make a persuasive argument. If you don't believe me, you go out and you pick up a book. It's a little bit old, but it works. How to Argue and Win Every Time. It's about 30 years old. How to Argue and Win Every Time by former CNBC host Jerry Spence, who's an activist attorney. Phenomenal book. It gives you the background. And by the way, his organization still gives training. I don't think he does because he's in his late 80s right now. Wrote him a letter. Very good book. You go and read that if you're a non-attorney and you figure out how attorneys think. At least that one way that attorneys think, and how to be persuasive. And it comes down to this. I'll give you cliff notes. Manipulating emotions. So there's some people who get upset with me because I'm wearing this, Safety Wars, right? Let me get the camera here. All right, I'm wearing this, Safety Wars jersey, Safety Wars hat, branding, right? So what if I could change my aura here? I go out, I get a nice jacket and tie, I'm on the air, and I get into my NPR voice. And I start talking nice and calmly, and blah, 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 right? And first of all, if you're a regular listener, you know me, you know I'm being phony if I do that. Lost credibility. But what about the people who don't see me? Oh, wow, this guy really knows what he's going to do. Well, look at him, he's in a nice jacket and tie, and he's very well spoken, and blah, 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 blah. So my question is this. What are you using to judge our leaders? Why are they our leaders? This is us. Not only safety professionals, but John Q. Public. Why are we choosing these people to follow? What are their qualifications? By the way, you say, well, Jimmy, what difference does it make? There was another situation. You're really hyper-local here in New York. You might have heard of it. 9/11/01. Where we had the government saying the air was fine and to breathe in down there, no problems. They weren't enforcing. By the way, I know this because they had the movies, Towers of Steel, right? They weren't enforcing respiratory protection. They weren't enforcing decontamination. They weren't enforcing anything on that cleanup down there a lot of the time. How many people are sick? Tens of thousands? You had an EPA administrator who said everything's fine? And I figured out why the EPA administrator said that, right? A little context. Look back and see who the head of OSHA was during 9/11, and you'll have your answer on that. Maybe the person making the call for these organizations should have been somebody who knew what the hell they were doing, that had qualifications, rather than someone that looks good in front of the thing. We remember the whole thing. I mean, we were in the New York area. We remember that. We had one person here, Jeffrey Olcott, suffered lifelong depression after this because he was an expert. He was my old boss, a mentor. He went out there and he told them, don't do this. I know three other people that said everything. I explained the whole thing. The powers that be, they were ignored. Why were they ignored? That's never been answered. Why were the experts ignored? And by the way, this report, 525 pages, mentions that. Why were people ignored? Why did we go against our peer-reviewed data on here? Why was that discounted? Why? I don't know. Has to be asked. Again, you got to have qualified people in charge. Lawyers are great. Administrators are great. Phenomenal. There's a role for them. Well-intentioned people all over the place here. I'm not saying these people are evil. No, not most of them. All right? Why don't we have qualified people in these posts? Did you realize that since 2000, I didn't go further back. There was no safety professional in charge of OSHA. They were good people. They're pretty confident. But where were the safety people to make the judgment on that? The U.S. National Institutes of Health, right, funded gain-of-function research and the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Okay, we all know that the Chinese Communist Party, if you're doing business in China, if you have a business in China, we all know that you're in league with Communist Chinese Party, right? CCP. Communist Party in China, or CPC, however you want to say it. You know that. The Chinese government, agencies within the U.S. government, and some members of the international scientific community sought to cover up facts concerning about the origins of the pandemic. This is where conspiracy theories happen. It's when there's a cover-up. Now, why was there a cover-up? A lot of conspiracy theories why there's a cover-up. One, embarrassment. Number two, was it deliberately done? I don't know. There was a cover-up. We all know, right? There's a book out there, Lab 257, which has basically, it was on Plum Island. I forget who the author was. Basically, it has been disproven for the most part on a lot of the facts, because as we have gone along, we become smarter. We have become better. Genetic testing has become better and everything else. And Lab 257 was basically a whole bunch of stuff was released from Plum Island, which is off the coast of Orient Point, Long Island. That's where they did the agricultural department, did their research, right? But one thing that I got out of the book was this. And she knows. If you're watching the video screaming, yeah, I scratched my nose. Human error. That's what I got out of it. So we all know that, and it creeps into it. Everything that you, human error, getting less strict. We have tolerance of deviation. We can safety professional, where we tolerate deviations from the plan. So you have the weapon, the Lab 257, and you see at the beginning they were very strict, and then it gets less strict as they go along. Well, we know that with a laboratory, you think the Chinese are any different? They're human beings over there. Accident, right? So they're stringent, and then they get less and less stringent as they go along. They get a little bit sloppy as they go along. Unfortunately, in our workplaces, that usually is a physical hazard, which ends up being a physical consequence. Unless you're one of the 50,000 people a year that die from industrial hygiene-related issues, according to OSHA. But what we can manage, right, more and more meat are the physical hazards. So you get a little sloppy, you have a physical hazard, now you're able to go and, right, fix that and go on. That's usually the case. But you do have catastrophic situations out there. We all know that. In this case, getting sloppy in the laboratory might have caused this situation. Might have been completely by accident. Operation Warp Speed to get out the therapeutic. Again, Congress, and I'm going to quote this. I got into an argument with somebody online, which I try to avoid doing. This is not a vaccination. This is better categorized as a therapeutic. My question is this, all of these vaccinations. This is the report, congressional report. My question is this, and this was written in part by a DPM, which I haven't figured out what that is. What is a DPM? Hold on, let's Google that. What is a DPM? DPM? Dr. Pat, Podiatric Medicine? I don't know. I'll look it up during break. All right. Some kind of doctor. All right. So this is what a doctor is saying here. Rampant fraud, waste, and abuse plagued by COVID-19 pandemic response. What else is new? Every time there's a disaster out there, you have rampant fraud, waste, and abuse. Never been able to get that. That's why, All right. Pandemic era school closures will have an enduring impact on generations of America's children, and these closures were enabled by groups meant to serve those children. So you had the teachers' unions calling the shots on school openings, and the reason being is that they were worried about their membership. That's the context. And they were not, and by the way, they felt that probably, and I'm going to take a little guess here, nobody had credibility in the government. They were giving them all different kinds of things that they didn't feel comfortable. And maybe the teachers' unions realize that every time that they have a health and safety issue, they're either not covered by OSHA, which is by a federal law, not covered by OSHA, or their state agencies drop the ball on everything. You can't trust them to science teachers with fume hoods in a laboratory. You can't trust the government to regulate those and come down. Hey, Jimmy, you know how many times I've heard Jimmy? I've told them how many times to fix the fume hood and they won't fix the fume hood. They won't trust them on that. You think you're going to trust them with something like this? Again, credibility. They did not have credibility. Maybe that got into it. I don't know. Right? And they were looking out for their union members, right? Can you blame them? No, they were doing probably what they needed to do. The Constitution cannot be suspended in times of crisis and restrictions on freedom so distrust in the public health. Well, this happened today in South Korea, didn't it? Where they declared martial law, restricted everybody's rights and everything else. They're now they're in deep gloom over there. The prescription cannot be worse than the disease, such as strict and overly broad lockdowns that led to predictable anguish and avoidable consequences. How many people are in debt over this? How many people have financial problems over this? How many people didn't get to say goodbye to their loved ones who were dying of COVID over this? Again, no capacity. So I hope that, unlike the 9/11 commission, where a majority of their suggestions were never implemented, I do hope that some of the suggestions in here and the ideas are addressed and implemented. And that's what I have there for my opening monologue here. I got on a little bit late. We had parent-teacher conferences, and that went overtime tonight. So here we go.
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com. In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to SafetyFM.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into SafetyFM.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozell with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Okay, so here we go. We found what the DP Brad White DPM was, right? So Brad Robert Weinstrom is an American. This is off of Wikipedia. It may or may not be true. Brad Robert Weinstrom is an American politician, U.S. Army Reserve officer, and a doctor of podiatric, P-O-D, he's a podiatrist, medicine, right? Has been in the U.S. Representatives for Ohio's 2nd Congressional District since 2013. When Steve Scalise was with the assassination attempt on Steve Scalise, Again, they said a shooting in Congress and schemes. No, it was an assassination attempt on a whole bunch of people there. He was attended to him, right? Weinstrom joined the U.S. Army Reserve in 1998, attaining the rank of colonel in March 2017. In 2005-2006, he was in Iraq with the Combat Support Hospital, right? And going on with that. So that before he got into politics, so he's an actual doctor. So which means that he was probably, he's not a virologist per se. However, he knew what questions to ask. That's obvious. Here, because I tell you what, it's a great report with that. Who was the other guy here? It was an MD, Raul Ruiz, MD, ranking member. So let's see him. Okay, Raul Ruiz is represents the 25th District of California. All right, he is a Democrat. So guess what? Democrat, Republican, came out with this report here, with this bipartisan report, I guess. So you had a lot of stuff going on here with this. So anyway, we're going to be peeling this apart. The other thing is this. Let me refer you back to some of our older shows on Saul Alinsky, not only the leadership, but Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. We talked about the whole thing with pushback faced by safety professionals. That is, that's all relevant to this. How are you manipulated with this? How does the news manipulate you? Because I tell you what, there's a lot of that's going on. People have taken to heart since the election year, at least in my world. Why do we trust people to tell us the news? Why are we doing that? So you had outfits like MSNBC that has a certain bent. Some of the hosts had a certain bent. They lost 47% of their listenership because of this after this election. I know people on social media, and it's not that they're blocking people. They just left social media altogether because they realize that they're being manipulated by it. Confirmation bias and among other things in there. So that's what we have going on there. So all of this stuff matters. On with our regular news. So here we have an issue in New Jersey. FBI seeks New Jersey residents' assistance in unraveling a drone mystery. The FBI is asking for public assistance in unraveling the mystery of dozens of recent nighttime drone sightings. After 2 weeks of reports of drones flying at night over northern New Jersey, often in groups, the Bureau publicized a phone number and website for gathering more reports related to the recent sightings of possible drones flying in several areas along the Raritan River. This is where I grew up, right in the same neighborhood. Witnesses have spotted a cluster of what look like to be drones and possibly fixed-wing aircraft, the FBI said in a news release along with the New Jersey State Police, New Jersey Office of Homeland Security Preparedness. We're asking the public to contact our 800 line or go to tips.fbi.gov. I'm not going to give out the phone number here because, God forbid, it's the wrong number. Then everybody's going to be getting phone calls at 2 o'clock in the morning, right? That happened in New Jersey one year. They gave out the wrong phone number to something. And property taxes. And it was, I got hundreds of phone calls one day, starting at 2 a.m. in the morning. Later Tuesday afternoon, law enforcement officials from Morris and Somerset Counties, Morris Plains and Morris County and Hillsborough, Somerset County, that's all in the same neighborhood, issued a statement urging people to send the FBI videos and photos of mystery drones they see in the area. Now, my question is this. back in 2023, we had this balloon going over the United States that we were told wasn't an issue. Until it was an issue. Is this the same deal here? Saying, well, this isn't an issue, nothing to worry about, nothing to see, and then guess what? Now, it's a problem now, right? So here we have from the Epoch Times, South Korea martial law decree spotlights communist infiltration. Chinese communist regime's infiltration of Korean politics and culture is extensive, deep, and not well known, according to experts. This is an article by Eva Fu and Catherine Yang. A martial law order from South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has again put the communist influence in the country under the spotlight. For the first time in nearly four decades, the South Korean leader invoked the authority, accusing the opposing Democratic Party aligning with communist North Korea. He revoked martial law hours later after Parliament voted to lift the order. I declare martial law to protect the Free Republic of Korea from the threat of North Korean communist forces and to eradicate the despicable pro-North Korean anti-state forces that are plundering the freedom and happiness of our people, and to protect the free constitutional order. He said the political opposition, which dominates the National Assembly, was paralyzed in the judiciary by intimidating judges and impeaching a large number of prosecutors and causing dysfunction in other government sectors as well. Okay, we'll see what happens. VOA, your voice of America, on the front page has not said anything about this. Mysteriously silent. So let's talk about VOA. I wish I could play the Sammy Hagar song, VOA. Okay, hold on. VOA News. So here we have VOA News, Voice of America. This is all open source. Biden visits Angola on the first trip to Africa as president. Hunter Biden gun case dismissed after President Joe Biden's sweeping pardon. Trump says he will block Nippon Steel from taking over U.S. Steel. Okay. Do we have anything on South Korea here? No. Let's go over to Asia. World. East Asia. Risk of North Korea's miscalculation rises after South's martial law declaration. And this is in English this time. U.S. and AI analysts are warning against a possible provocation by Pyongyang after a short-lived declaration of martial law on Tuesday threw South Korea into political turmoil. There's potential for miscalculation on North Korea's part, said Sidney Seiler, who until last year was the National Intelligence Officer for North Korea on the U.S. and National Intelligence Council in a phone interview with VOA Korean. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol imposed emergency martial law on his unsuspecting country. We just talked about this. All political activities, including rallies, demonstrations, were prohibited, while all media became subject to the control of the martial law command. So, I don't know. With that, Robert Robson, who served as the charge of the affair and deputy chief of mission at the U.S. Embassy in Seoul, told VOA Korean via email Tuesday that the U.S. should deliver a stern warning to adversaries such as North Korea against trying to take advantage of the situation. Right? Okay. Here is another one. Chinese hackers still lurk in the U.S. telecommunications system. Chinese hackers blamed for compromising U.S. telecommunications infrastructure and spying on American presidential campaigns and American officials are still entrenched in those systems, according to senior U.S. officials who warn it could be years before the hackers are kicked out. Well, if they have them identified, just kick them the hell out. What's the issue? If they don't identify them, I don't know. Then we have a problem. The U.S. Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency and the FBI on Tuesday urged the telecommunication companies and their customers to take additional precautions. We cannot say with certainty that the adversary has been evicted because we still don't know the scope of what they're doing. Okay, now we have context. We cannot with confidence say that we know everything, nor would our partners. We're still trying to understand. Senior FBI official who also spoke with reporters was equally cautious. Word of a breach emerged in October when Chinese-linked cyber gang known as Salt Typhoon was linked to efforts to intercept communications for the presidential campaigns of U.S. President-elect Donald Trump and his Democratic challenger, Vice President Kamala Harris. Okay. China bans exports to the U.S. of gallium, germanium, antimony in response to chip sanctions. China announced Tuesday it is banning exports to the United States of gallium, germanium, antimony, and other key high-tech materials for potential military applications as a general principle, lashing back on semiconductor-related U.S. limits on semiconductor-related exports. The Chinese Commerce Ministry announced the move that after Washington expanded its list of Chinese companies subject to export controls on computer chip making equipment, software, and high bandwidth memory chips. Such chips are needed for advanced applications. The ratcheting up of trade restrictions comes as President-elect Donald Trump has been threatening to sharply raise tariffs on imports from China and other countries, potentially intensifying simmering tensions over trade and technology. Okay, let's go on over to ocean news here. Death of lake diver in Apple Valley leads to the state's largest workplace fine. So this is out of Minnesota, and Minnesota has their own OSHA, which I was unable to get the accident report here. They don't post them online. A Columbia Heights company that removes weeds from lakes has been hit with the state's largest ever work safety penalty, $730,000+. After one of his divers died under working underwater. Joseph Anderson, 18, died in May after an accident on Loch Lavon Lake in Apple Valley where he was cleaning out weeds for a company. Minnesota work safety regulators tagged the company in November with 5 willful violations of commercial diving standards. Willful violations are rare and reserved for the most egregious worker safety violations. An investigation by MinOSHA found the company's employees didn't have the experience or training to perform work safely, nor were they instructed in first aid and CPR. You can give us a call, 845-269-5772. I'm teaching a class on Friday. Your lake had not developed a safe practices manual, did not have an employee in charge of diving operations on the day, right? So no dive supervisor. Kind of hard to contest this one because I have supervised several dive jobs over the years, and got to have that dive safety manual. You don't have it, you're going to have a problem. Okay, stream. Okay. And let's go to commercial break here.
Hey, employers, want to avoid hefty OSHA fines? Listen up, OSHA or the Occupational Safety and Health Administration can issue penalties after inspecting your workplace. If they find violations, you'll get notified by certified mail or in person. You have 15 working days to contest it or the penalty becomes final. How are penalties determined? It depends on your business size, the severity of the violation, your history, and your good faith efforts. Even if you fix the issue right away, you might still get fined. Let's talk numbers. A willful violation can cost between $11,524 and $161,323. Repeated violations hit up to $161,323. Serious violations can reach $16,131. And other than serious violations, can also cost up to $16,131. If you fail to correct a violation, it's $16,131 per day. Lastly, missing a posting requirement? That's another $16,131. Stay informed, stay compliant, and keep your workplace safe to avoid these costly penalties.
Okay, so we're going to head on over to the Department of Labor press releases today. Department of Labor obtains consent judgment ordering two healthcare staffing companies to pay a total of more than $2.4 million in back wages and liquidated damages to 341 employees. U.S. Department of Labor has obtained a consent judgment, an order in federal court that recovers a total of more than $2.4 million in back wages and liquidated damages from Massachusetts and Pennsylvania healthcare staffing agencies that denied 341 employees overtime wages, including employees misclassified as independent contractors. So they misclassify them as independent contractors, pay them less, and so they don't have to obey OSHA rules. That is part of their business model. Again, they do this. This is, you're not getting away with it, all right? U.S. Department of Labor awards $3 million to empower Cambodian organizations and persons with disabilities to address labor exploitation. The U.S. Department of Labor today announced a $3 million award to humanity and inclusion to strengthen the capacity of organizations and persons with disabilities and their key stakeholders in Cambodia to address exploitation and barriers that impede access to decent work. Now, do I want people in other countries to be exploited and as slave labor wages? The answer is no. Absolutely not. But here we have, what's this international agreement we're in? I think that needs to be reviewed. You know, with that, we're having a lot of issues here in the United States with labor. Stuff not being done or anything. Why are we doing that? Why are we involving ourselves here? Right? Sometimes we need to. We don't want slave labor. We got it. We don't want to give stuff to slave labor, but all these international agreements on with an agency that we already know is underfunded, that's a problem. The announcement coincides with the United Nations International Day of Persons with Disabilities and aligns with this year's theme of amplifying the leadership of persons with disabilities in for an inclusive and sustainable future. My question is, how does this work with the depopulation agenda of certain UN organizations? Yeah, we got it in writing from them from like early 90s is when they started to publicize this, when it goes way back here to the beginning. I don't know. Well, how do you resolve that? I always seem to question that. And that's not the other wars out there. They talk about it, but it turns out to be somewhat true. I don't know. With that, how do you resolve that? Now, here we have something that disgusts me. U.S. Department of Labor announces, and how many minutes do we have left? 2 minutes. Okay, let's see. Well, did you know that we can have disabled people here that are real? We're going to pay them less than minimum wage. And by the way, we're not going to, in my experience, we're not going to do anything with safety-wise. I know because I trained disabled people for a certain university in northern New Jersey here. And we, with people with disabilities, they don't get, you know, it's along the lines of you should be happy getting a job, let alone getting paid minimum wage and having a safe and healthful workplace free of recognized hazards. So U.S. Department of Labor announced this proposed rule to phase out certificates allowing payment of less than minimum wage to workers with disability. Right? I welcome this. With this here, and they're asking for comments. So that's what we got today. Again, said some pretty controversial things here, but that's okay. No, it's offensive to me. 1.2 million people dead. That's offensive to me. No, it's offensive to me. Tens of thousands of people being lied to on air quality and their manager's not enforcing respiratory rules or anything else. That's bad. How about, no, it's offensive to me, having safety professionals not having any resources to do their job, or it being the fall guy for everything. That's offensive to me, which means we can't do our job, which means in the next pandemic, it's going to be a replay of the mistakes that we talked about tonight that were in a congressional report, which pretty much vindicates people who have been paying attention here. So that's what I got here. I want to thank everybody for listening, and I will see you back tomorrow night, God willing, Tuesday, Wednesday, December 4th. For Safety Wars, this is Jim Polzel.
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.